This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Yep, Football Friday. Football Friday. Already started off on a Thursday last night with Seattle and San Francisco. We're off and running, man.
Oh.
Texans and the Patriots on Sunday. You can hear that. You can hear that, what? Right? Hey, I don't know. You sounding like there's something going on in the background over there.
I'm kind of being flooded. This has been a weird week. This has been a strange week. I think because of the injury of Nico Collins, coupled with the fact that the Texans are facing a team that nobody's really excited about in general.
I'm excited to go kick their ass.
Right. Yeah. But even like by way of name recognition and everything, even the guys that are somewhat recognizable might not play in this game. And it's been a weird week. And all of a sudden, here we are. It's Friday. And all right, let's go.
Yeah.
I hope the Texans players haven't overlooked the upcoming opponent to the degree that you and I have.
Their job is not to. Our job is to do that. Our job is to completely disrespect the Patriots, which we will do over the next 4 hours at least a few times, I would say.
Oh, I'm already, I've already taken 3 victory laps for the Texans' triumph over them. I'm looking way past them.
Yeah, yeah.
On to Green Bay. That's what my Friday press conference was.
There you go. So we're feeling good this morning, man. We're feeling good. A couple things, like last night, we had Thursday Night Football last night. You if you listen to the game here on Sports Radio 610, thank you for that. The 49ers, even their record at 3-3, as do the Seattle Seahawks at the same time. Remember when the Seahawks were 3-0 and they're like, what a great story this is. The Seattle Seahawks with a rookie head coach and the Geno Smith redemption tour continues, and now you look up and it turns out they're just one of the teams on the scrap heap there.
I thought that was I'm not like trying to pat myself on the back for this or anything, but I thought that was one of the more obvious like early season storylines that wasn't going to hold up. It would have been impressive, but they'd squeaked out some good wins versus some questionable competition, and it was just a little bit of a misleading 3-0.
I think so too. And so the 49ers, if you missed it last night, 49ers beat the Seahawks 36-24, a high scoring game. And yet with San Fran, if I'm a San Fran fan, I still come away from that game a little concerned about it. Gave up a kickoff return for a touchdown. They couldn't do anything in the red zone. They kind of let Seattle hang around in this game. The one thing I will say as a Texan fan, to localize this game that took place in the far reaches of the football universe last night up in Seattle, is watching San Francisco's run game, I'm like, oh, okay, so that's what it's supposed to look like, huh? Okay,
right.
Jordan Mason's 8 carries for 73 yards. So they're like, well, Jordan Mason's hurt, so now we got to go to the next guy, this Garendo dude that they drafted this year, who busts off a 76 yard run to close out the game. You know, they're trying to squeak out the clock, and they're up 29-24, and if they give the ball back to Seattle, that crowd's going to be going crazy, and they might blow this game. First play from scrimmage on the final drive, handoff to just a simple handoff up the middle, and the center is burying a guy, and the guard is burying a guy, and Garendo sees the hole, and he's down the sidelines for 76 yards. And I'm going, that's what it's supposed to look like, right? You're supposed to be able to just plug any old Cam Akers or Dario Gumbawale in there, and they're supposed to be able to bust off 8 yards a carry is what I was
told.
It
is when you have offensive linemen who are executing and blocking the people they're supposed to block, all of that stuff, it's amazing how much different it looks. And that you could even get, just even if you could get 3.9 yards per carry out of Dario Gumbawale.
Yeah.
Bobby Slowik, I always look forward to his Thursday pressers, and because I think he's very open about talking about what the issues are on the team, for the most part, what they need to do better, all of that. And I actually, I felt a little bit better about the actual play calling in the game. I think that this is where I just feel differently than a lot of people do about what Bobby Slowick's issue is right now. I don't think it's about the actual play calling. I think it's about the execution of the plays. Yeah. I think it's about the players doing the right things and successfully doing their jobs with some calls that are I'm fine with. Yeah. Now, that all still comes back on Bobby Slowick. He is the offensive coordinator. Getting this run game going is his responsibility. But, man, when I watch the 49ers operate, I'm pretty sure that the Seahawks, unlike most Texans opponents, in game planning for the week aren't saying like, oh, all we have to do is line up the defensive tackle here and then have him move there. There you go. That's how you beat the Texans.
Problem
run
solved.
Game.
Yeah.
You got the Texans offensive lineman up at the line and they're like, wait a second. These guys aren't just going to stay put. Wait, you mean at the snap of the ball, they might slant out of the gap they're in?
Yeah.
What on earth do I do there? Yeah. Then their brains turn to liquid and run out their ears onto the turf at NRG Stadium. This is it's the most frustrating thing in the world. It's some of these little simple execution things that the Texans are not handling properly, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating. We'll get to the practice report yesterday. The injury report was interesting yesterday. We'll get to that in a second. As far as the game goes last night, yeah, Seth, there was a play. It was a simple kind of throwaway play. It was 1st and 10, midfield, something like that. And they hand the ball to Jordan Mason. The Niners do. Hand the ball to Jordan Mason. It's a nice run. It's like a 9-yard run, right? And they go, let's take Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit. Now, look at what Trent Williams. Let's take a look at what Trent Williams did on this play. I'm like, no, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to watch a willing blocker at left tackle in the run game. I'm going to be so jealous. And they do the overhead view. You know, like they must have a drone up there or something. They're doing like the overhead view of the play.
They've got the overhead camera on the
They do the overhead view of the play, and I'm like, ugh. And they circle Trent Williams, and they snap the ball, and he just goes and buries this guy. And like he just mauls him, and I'm like, ugh. That must be nice, man. Like having a left tackle. It's
just like the mauling
just,
people.
Just willing to get into street fights. You know what I mean?
How many examples have we seen of genuine maulings by the offensive line?
This year, three. I don't know.
Three total?
I don't know.
Is there a maul grade? Maul grade on PFF or something. Man,
It
doesn't need to be a pancake or anything.
Feels like three. Yeah.
Are you manhandling people? Are you making guys question whether they belong in this
profession? So which of the offensive linemen embody that sort of ethos on this team?
I think Shaq Mason used to, but he hasn't quite been himself this year. Shaq Mason might be so far.
Has he been influenced by the fashionista tackles on the team?
Yeah, maybe he's a little too up in his mentions or something. I don't know. He's also getting old.
That's true, too.
It comes to mauling, he might have gone the Jose Abreu route.
Where are the two young guys on the mauling scale, Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs? Okay, that answers the question. You're good. Okay, I was double checking to make sure you weren't actually frozen. You looked frozen for a second. I'm like, is Seth still there? I know they haven't mauled a lot of people, but do they have it in them? And if they have it in them, are we worried about them being influenced by the fashionista tackles?
They do have the ability to maul people. We saw it in the Colts game, especially.
Yes.
There was mauling going on there.
There was mauling.
Remember the one play where Kenyon Green looked like he made it look like the scene from Die Hard where the villain is falling off the skyscraper? He had gone up and hit Zaire Franklin and just knocked him out of the frame. Yeah, there is. The maul is in them.
Yeah.
This is what happens with offensive linemen is that they are, as much as I like to poke fun at them because they're, you know, naturally deplorable people, but the offensive linemen in general, they have the maul in them, but because they've got so much going on in their brains that sometimes these are the two things that conflict with each other in a football player, especially with linemen. Mm-hmm. The conflict for blood flow between your brain and your balls. And if you've got too much blood flow and too much oxygen going to the brain because you're thinking so much, you end up a eunuch.
Yeah.
Not enough blood flow to the groin. And they got to get to the point where they're automatic enough mentally that they can go out there and be caveman brutes physically. Because I do think they have it in them.
Yeah.
It's just there's just a little too much hesitation, trepidation, a little bit too much uncertainty to where they can't go out and maul. Now, there have been good examples of it. And even last week, I thought there were some good examples of it. There were some, you know, when they were backed up in the end zone, they got in their own end zone. They got like a 4-yard run, then a 7-yard run.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was good. They just got to do it more consistently.
Yeah.
Obviously.
They were all back at practice yesterday. Kenyon Green, Titus Howard, both limited. Laramie back full go. So he was out on Wednesday, full go yesterday. Joe Mixon back at practice. I texted you from practice yesterday, Seth. I said, hey, Mixon.
Did.
Mixon suited up, and he's doing stuff. He was limited, but he's doing stuff out there.
My question was, why are you texting me instead of tweeting to the masses? But
it had already been tweeted. Somebody had already gotten to it.
Yeah, I had already seen the alerts. I was like, I know, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that irritation you get when somebody, just being a totally solid dude, is just telling you something? That's... But if you know it already, you're like, yeah, I know.
I got that heat from you yesterday.
You know, don't insult me by acting like I didn't know this thing that was reported 2 minutes ago.
I was just excited, that's all. I wanted to share my excitement with you.
I didn't feel like
oh,
that.
Oh, I know.
Sometimes I do, and I feel guilty, but not with you. Never with you.
Right.
But with others. Yeah.
We'll hear from Joe Mixon in the next segment, but sounds like it's still up in the air, very much up in the air if he's going to play this weekend, is the sense I get.
Yeah, I know. I didn't like any of all y'all's reports about Joe Mixon, about how he was out there and he was testing it out and everything.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's all right, though. Do more with less.
Today's a big day, man. Today's a big day.
You got to be like the Marines right now. You got no Joe Mixon. You got no Nico Collins.
You got to find
don't
a way.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Show me. What time do I show up? Where do I go?
That's it,
point me in the right direction.
That's it. The Patriots' best offensive player has missed practice the last 2 days. Ramondre Stevenson, who was kind of in a quasi-doghouse already because he's been fumbling a lot this year, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, an already decrepit offense might be missing its best player, so that's good news. Robert Woods out. Looks like he's going to miss the game on Sunday. Kamari Lassiter, it sounds like, may miss the game on Sunday.
That's an owie right there.
That's an owie, yeah. That's not a deep position for the
Texans.
It's
a different defense than it was last year. They're way more aggressive. D'Amico's willing to release the hounds with blitzes, particularly on third down. So it'll be interesting to see what they do if Kamari Lassiter doesn't play. Do they feel confident enough in the guys they do have to play man that they can go ahead and release the hounds? We'll see.
Yep.
We'll see.
Let's lay this game out for you. The Texans and the Patriots on Sunday. We'll lay it out for you, six-pack style. We got six storylines and predictions for the game on Sunday. We got a busy show, man. Ted Johnson's going to join us at 9 o'clock today. Yeah, Teddy
nice.
J. Yeah, that'll be fun. We've got Circle of Swarm at 7:20. We got five Reasons I Hate You at 8:25.
Yes.
Yes. So it's gonna be a nice hateful show today here.
Circle of Swarm is I lost sleep over this last night. Okay.
I got my names written down right here. I lose sleep over it too. I'm like, God. There's a lot of good candidates, though, this
making
week.
Making it only six is we made it hard on ourselves
makes
emotionally.
Makes it tough. All right, so we'll get to that. We'll lay it out for you. Six storylines for the game tomorrow. We'll do that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's six-pack this thing. Let's get the storylines laid out. It's Patriots-Texans. It's Patriots-Texans noon kickoff in New England. You can hear the game right here on Sports Radio 610. You can hear Texans Countdown beginning at 9 a.m. with me and Seth C. Payne.
Old Sethers.
The old Sethers. And then me and Stern Dog after the game, Clint Sterner, till 6:30, till Sunday Night Football on Sunday. So big day Sunday. The Texans trying to go 5-1. Seth, they're trying to do this in a place where they have never walked out victorious. They've never had a fun flight home from Providence, Rhode Island before.
Ever? The Texans have never won in New England?
They're 0-7 in New England lifetime. Yes. 0-7.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
You want some more facts? 0-7, never been a favorite, and they've lost by an average of 18 points.
Hey, shut up.
No, what? I don't know. You think I'm making this up? No, I did the research. No.
Did I do this research?
No.
Can I trust this research?
No, you can trust it. It's mine.
See, that's the kind of stat I would research, and you'd hear it. I would say it, and you'd be like, all right, Seth. All right.
I can almost name the scores. That's how scarred I am in my head.
Wait, an average of 18 points.
They lost in 2006 there, 40-7. This is all straight out of my head. You're looking at the rundown. This is not on the rundown.
Yeah.
They lost the Letterman jacket game in 2012.
I don't know what you're talking about.
42-14. They then, a few weeks later, lost a playoff game there, 41-28.
Oh.
Yeah, man.
That was kind of a close game for three quarters.
It was, yeah, yeah.
The Texans, that was like one of the best performances any team had had versus the Patriots that year through three quarters.
They were down five, and then... Yeah, the 2012 playoff game. Then the playoff game with Brock Osweiler.
That's the one. Oh, sorry.
You're thinking of that one. That was a 5-point game late in the third quarter, and Will Fuller had a deep ball go right through his hands.
Tom Brady just threw up a prayer of a potential pick six.
Yeah.
That ended up being a reception.
Yeah.
Brock Osweiler almost. Jadeveon Clowney was magnificent in that game.
He was. Yeah.
For three quarters.
He was. He was. They were moving. Remember, they were moving Clowney and Merciless over the nose in that
game? That was the big one where, hey, looks like the antidote for.
Yep.
Tom Brady is to have a freakish human being rush up the middle and put pressure in his face.
Well, it's a brave new world now because the Texans are headed up there 4-1, the Patriots are 1-4, and the Texans are a 7-point favorite in this game without their best player. They lost their best player to a hamstring injury.
I won't be happy unless they win by at least 18 points. They need to start offsetting this horrendous, ridiculous deficit they have.
They need to win by exactly 18 points just to symbolically show the Patriots, we're here now. This is our world now.
Yeah.
21-3. That should be the final score. All right. Let's get to the six-pack here. We start with number one. So let's start there with Nico. No Nico in this game. So now what? Here was Bobby Slowick yesterday. Who steps up with no Nico Collins?
You know, Nico is a guy that is really irreplaceable. You know, I think he's been playing probably the best ball of his career. I think right now he was, I'd say for us, he was the best receiver in the NFL and what he was doing. And you know, you can't replace that. But at the same time, we got a room full of guys that are hungry, that want to go in, they want to get their ops. I think Hutch did a great job in the game. After Nico went out, he took advantage of his ops. He showed up in the run game. He works every single day. Obviously, you have Metch, you have Woody, you have Sims. I mean, we got a lot of guys that can go out, that can play, and that can function. So we have full confidence that we'll just keep rolling.
You know, so many.
That's good, Ben. We're good. That's good.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So many of the times that you see Stephon Diggs, you know, get something underneath. It's when, okay, he lines up on the same side as Nico. Nico runs a deep ball. Things are open up underneath for Stephon Diggs. He's been very, very good underneath and on the intermediate and stuff and all that. But there are also examples of when it's Tank Dell that's running the deep route, and that opens it up for Stephon Diggs. I don't want to call it an embarrassment of riches, but they still have very menacing threats in the wide receiving corps.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a little bit different, and ultimately maybe it's for the greater good if they do have to kind of target people differently, get the tight ends more involved. But there is still a dynamic on the team where you've got kind of like back when you used to have Will Fuller that would open things up for DeAndre Hopkins underneath. You still have that with Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs.
I agree.
Just not as potent and scary and powerful to a defense is when Nico Collins is on the field, but you still do have that dynamic.
Yeah, I would say half the teams in the league would still swap their top three receivers and tight end for the Texans' top three receivers and tight end, even without Nico Collins.
I think we're in a weird place where it's kind of like, well, okay, Nico Collins has been the best thing going offensively for this team other than C.J. Stroud, and yet Nico Collins goes out, and the thing I'm still most concerned about is, all right, can they start running the ball with consistency?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can they really? I'm not as worried about Nico Collins as can you run the ball consistently to help out Nico Collins when he returns and everybody else.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to the second one then. Possible Joe Mixon return. Joe Mixon practiced yesterday. Here was Mixon, a little exchange with the media. How is he feeling? What's the likelihood he's back on Sunday?
I felt good, man. Obviously, been pretty much going back and forth with training staff,
figure out when I'm going to get back and when I'm going to start being able to participate in certain things. So I felt good.
It's a step. Do you think it's enough of a step that Sunday you have some optimism, or is it a little soon?
I think we'll probably go through practice tomorrow, see what's going on, and obviously us come up with a decision on whether to go or whether to just wait another week.
All right, that audio courtesy of Aaron Wilson's Twitter feed yesterday. How you feeling on this after hearing that audio, Seth?
I don't feel awesome about it. It feels like they're just in touch and going. When somebody's had an injury as long as this, I think it's hard to do this, but you got to err on the side of conservatism. You got to be, you just don't want them to go out there before they feel 100% solid with it, have them aggravated again, and then boom, he's out for another 5 or 6 weeks. So I feel like that, just by him talking about the way they're feeling it out, it feels like this is kind of a, this is the week before the week they make the decision.
I'm with you, especially when he specifies, see if I get held out one more week. You know, like, clearly there's been a conversation internally about, okay, this is New England, and then we got Green Bay the next week.
Feels a little bit like you're taking the PSATs before the actual SATs. Mm-hmm. You're just like, all right, let's see, let's diagnose exactly whether you actually can go to college or not.
Yeah.
We're gonna let's see if this is even a goal this week.
That's the New England Patriots. They're the PSATs.
You're the PSATs. Is that still a thing? Do they still do PSATs?
I think so. That's what decides the National Merit Scholars is the PSAT, and not the SAT.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
I was going through a rough stretch at home and was like, I was having a rough semester in high school, and I also, like, at the same time, because I did well on my PSATs.
Yeah.
I got one of those awards, and I remember my the nerds in my class.
What the hell's he
like,
doing
what
up
the
here?
Hell? What?
What the hell is he up on this stage for? I'm not going to tell him to move. He's really big. All right, let's keep it moving. Number three in the six-pack. There's no audio with this one. This is just another plea from me, I'm sure from Seth and many other Texan fans, to you Texans. Just no silly stuff. None of the silly gaga that keeps these bad teams in games. No block punts. We haven't seen any of those since week one. No muffed punts. We haven't seen that since Steven Sims got benched. You took the penalties down from 12 to like 7 or 8 last week. That's better. You can do better than 7 or 8, but let's, you know, baby steps. CJ, I can't believe I have to drag you into this conversation. But no fourth quarters with multiple turnovers and intentional grounding penalties.
Yeah, what the hell, CJ?
Yeah. I preface by saying I can't believe I've got to take my favorite son and actually have to spank him here, because he's a model citizen usually.
You know, the thing about that fumble that CJ had, where ultimately he's responsible for it, and yet at the same time, Titus Howard just blocked your dude. And Blake Fisher just blocked your dude. But because I went back and I was watching some of the plays that CJ made under pressure in that game, and he is really good with his ball security in the pocket. He holds it high in front of him with two hands.
Yep.
That one throw that he had made while he was getting hit in the face to Stephon Diggs off to the right.
Incredible.
You can see him working through the traffic in the pocket with his hands both clutching the ball, held out in front of him. Like, he's smart about that. So that was a little bit flukish. It's going to happen at times.
Oh, yeah.
The interception was the one that's on CJ.
He knows.
Great play by the defender, but I'm not worried that all of a sudden CJ's going to become a turnover.
Yeah, I shouldn't have even brought CJ into the conversation, because that's just regular football stuff, and that's not a trend. I'm talking about the silly stuff that hands 7 points to the other team.
I would say even silly stuff like Robert Woods, as awesome as he was in the return game, also, hey, let's not go out of our ways to field the ball on the 2 yard line
stuff
on a punt.
Like that. Yeah.
That's the
Patriots cannot win this game. The Texans can lose this game. The Patriots cannot go and win this game.
Did he fair catch it on the two?
No, he tried to return it.
He tried to return
it. Yes. Yeah, he tried to return it. All right, number four. Kill the rookie. I'm just three words. Kill the rookie.
Kill him. Kill him dead. Make him question whether he should have gone into tennis or not.
Here is Dan Orlovsky on ESPN yesterday on NFL Live. I think it was yesterday. It was earlier this week. It was after they named Drake May the starter up in New England. I think he's a legit concern for Drake May's safety.
When I think about their defense, the word that becomes apparent is just overwhelming. One, overwhelming lockdown coverage. I mean, guys, they're going to play man coverage, and they're really good at it across the board in physical. They are fast at the second level with their linebackers. That's going to be a challenge for New England, who hasn't gotten open downfield much. Second thing, guys, these linebackers play downhill and violent. So, yes, New England has a good run game, but this group of backers down in Houston is physical, and they can get after you in the ring. And watch Toto back here. Just bang. You're talking about a group physically that plays at a violent level. Everybody on this defense tackles. One of the things that New England wants to do is get the ball to the unblocked defender. J-Mac, you know this. Some secondaries in the NFL, they don't want to tackle. Not in Houston. And then this pass rush will get after you. And again, to Mike Reese's point, this offensive line has been in flux in New England, and they've been poor. So the challenge for Drake May, you're going against a Houston team that is violent and overwhelming on defense.
Yeah. My favorite part of that is the group of linebackers. I'm like, well, there's two of them.
There are only two.
Yeah, yes. It's a group of two.
Other than the one rep Neville Hewitt has taken at linebacker this year, they've had only two linebackers.
Now, I agree with what he's saying. Like, Toa Toa and Azeez have been bringing the funk this year, man. Like, so I agree with that. It's just funny to categorize it as a group. Like, well, it's basically just two guys.
It is, though. The physicality of the defensive backs is a calling card of this defense, and it's good. They've had some lapses with their cornerbacks coming up and playing the run, but it's not because of a lack of want to. They just got a little sloppy a couple weeks ago. They cleaned it up last week. So yeah that's make. I want to see CJ going out and giving advice to Drake at the end of the game.
Yes.
In kind of a backhanded way where he says, hey, don't worry about all those egregious mistakes you made. Keep your chin up.
Can you imagine if CJ's just like, bro, you got to demand a trade. You got to get out of here. That's his advice. You got no linemen. You got no receivers. You got to get out of here. All right, let's number five. I don't know how this impacts the game. I think it's fun that Nick Caserio is returning for his first regular season trip to New England. I know they went in the preseason a couple years ago. I was thinking about this yesterday. I need to go back and see what the reaction in New England was when Caserio took the GM job. Because my guess is there were probably a lot of people up there that were like, phew, good luck with all that. You know, like that he was taking. That was I know you remember 2021. This organization was not in a good place, and that was before Deshaun got all the lawsuits and everything else. I wonder what they were saying back then, because now he's taking one of the four or five best teams in football back up there. Like, hey man, I'm a local boy. I've done good for myself here.
Look, we're having Ted Johnson on at 9 a.m. and we had him on a couple years ago, and Ted was almost kind of he was having fun with it, but he was like, we talk about you guys a lot, like just what a mess it is down there and everything. Yeah. And I was like, at the time, I was like, all right, well, listen, it's not like you guys are like, all right, it's not the bastion and the heyday that it once was up there. Now I think we can really gloat at Ted's expense.
That's why we're bringing him on at 9 o'clock, is to really gloat with him. Yeah, that's
we can gloat while he's not in the same room as us.
That's right. Yeah, that's the key. That's the key. Yeah. All right, last.
Because he's still very, very fit.
He is. Yeah, he's in
still
good.
Looks like
dude.
A
dude. He doesn't look real. Like he looks computer generated. 27-13 is my prediction for this game. Texans 27, Patriots 13.
There's a couple things I need to do. I want to check on a couple things before I give my prediction at the end of the show.
Okay.
Last week I've got a lot of pressure on me because I was so close.
You were spot
accurate.
On, dude. And not just the score, but like how the game was going to go. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had predicted 20-19, which is a weird score to predict. At one point, though, in the fourth quarter, it was 20-17 with the Texans backed up in their own end zone.
It's almost like you paid Robert Woods to field that punt right there, so you would be right. That's how they wound up back there. All right, so 27-13 is my prediction. Seth will have his later in the show.
I've got the Texans winning, but there's just one little thing I want to figure out.
Sounds good. Yeah, we'll get to headlines coming up next. Top of the hour, Bobby Slowick explaining end of game decisions. We'll also stack the card for this weekend around the NFL. It's an interesting weekend of football here in week 6. 7:20, Circle of Swarm. The pressure is on Payne and Pendergast to get this one right. Headlines coming up next. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, headlines. Let's start with the Texans. They've got the Patriots on Sunday. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610. Texans are a touchdown favorite in this game. Bobby Slowick met with the media yesterday. Taking a look back, how did you feel about the Buffalo game, and what are some of the challenges you're facing moving forward?
For us, even offensively, we felt like that was probably one of our better offensive games. First half was one where really we felt like we were doing and executing how we wanted. We had cleaned up the penalties, which was a big thing for us going into the game, which is a credit to the guys. I mean, they've gone all in on really trying to hammer that out. Then the second half, we kind of had a few times it showed back up and we just couldn't overcome it. And, you know, like statistically, we've been good on third down. We've been good in the red zone. We've been good in yards. There's like this void somewhere between the plus 45 and the plus 30 that we've had some issues in. And that right now as a staff is what we're in there grinding and trying to figure out. Because really in the game where we stalled in the second half was we had two, really three, if you count the 44-second play, times where we got across the 40-yard line and we had no points to show for it, you know, which that gets hard. That's hard to win in the NFL when that happens. So we were fired up as a team that we were able to rally together and get that done.
Yeah, they did. The drive that ended on fourth and one with them running Dari Ogunbowale into a brick wall, and the drive that ended with CJ's interception were both excellent drives. They were double-digit plays. They'd burn 5 or 6 minutes off the clock. Both those drives were without Nico Collins. We'll point out Nico was gone after it was 14-3. So yeah, they're still even amidst on the scoreboard these big lulls. They're still doing good things. The plus 45 to plus 30 thing is interesting because he's exactly right. That's why Kaimi has so many 55-yard field goals, because they stall at the 35 or the 40-yard line. That's where they bog down all the time.
That's where Kaimi Fairbairn has been such an asset, because they've gotten to this point where they're really good at getting to the 55-yard field goal mark.
Yes,
that's their red zone. Sean, is the entire area on the field. From the,
from the 40 yard in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, just, well, let's get to there. Let's get to the spot where Kaimi can take us in.
Yeah.
If they get into the actual red zone, I actually feel pretty good about them.
That's what Bobby said. They score touchdowns when they get down there this year.
The pre-red zone, mm-hmm. they're a mess.
Yep.
It's like they're getting a little too excited during the, you know, heavy petting part.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, oh, there we go.
Yeah, don't even get to the red zone.
It turns out I got to go to work in the morning.
So hopefully, the big thing Bobby pointing out there, like, and that's how I felt at halftime of that game. Like, man, you can see what this looks like when they just don't shoot themselves in the foot. Just run the ball. Run the ball competently. You don't need to be averaging 6 yards a carry or anything. Just run it competently and don't get penalties, and this thing can move. You got CJ Stroud at quarterback.
They get up to the line in that fourth and short, and it doesn't look like they're blitzing. So okay, all we need is 6 inches here, and you don't have the guys that can maul and mash defensive tackles up front to just get a little bit of a push, a little smidgen of a push, and that's a problem right now. And they've been good in short yardage situations for the most part. It's just Bobby chose violence there, and this is not a violent offensive line.
No, it's not. It's not. We kind of on the fly came up with the maul scale earlier in the show. We were the degree to which each of the offensive linemen on the Texans like to maul people. Someone asked about Blake Fisher. You watched a lot of Fisher this week.
He's got a maul lust. He's got a lust for mauling.
Okay.
I think it's just he'll get there. He'll get there.
Okay.
There's a lot of potential with Blake Fisher. I'm honestly genuinely really excited about him moving on into the future. And he's shown improvement from his first appearance to the second one to a big degree. He's not on the mall scale yet, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
think honestly, I think Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green both have the want to.
Yeah.
They're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone said on the text page, Texans guards want to maul. The Texas tackles want to go to the mall. I'm circling that text. That's genius.
So I've long dreamed of having the suavest, most fashion-forward offensive tackle in the league.
That's
a lot of times people are like, hey, who do you want? A guy like Trent Williams? Like, no. No, he's just a big brute. I don't want him. I need a civilized offensive tackle.
I need my
tackle.
Left tackle on the swag list on the team. Yeah, for
give
sure.
Give me someone. Give me a finesse lover, not a fighter.
The drip list. Yeah. Thursday Night Football last night, San Francisco evens their record at 3-3 on the season. They beat the Seahawks in Seattle 36-24. This was a fun game. This was a game, I mean, a little like the Texans. San Francisco built up a 23-3 lead, and it felt like they were going to run away with this thing. And then they give up a kickoff return for a touchdown to Laviska Shenault, and all of a sudden, it's a game again. And Seattle had chances. I mean, Geno Smith threw a couple of gifts to the San Francisco defense. He had a couple bad interceptions in this game, including one that the Niners got with Seattle looking to take the lead in this game in the fourth quarter. So this was it ended up being a 12-point game. This was a fun, close game throughout most of the second half.
They did. Seattle made it really, really interesting in the second half. There were times where with Seattle, though, too, it felt a little Texans-like. Like at the end of the first half, the Geno Smith and DK Metcalf had that 52-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Wiped out by an illegal shift. That felt very Texans-like, yes. 2024 Texans-like.
Yep. They ended up getting a field goal instead of a touchdown there. So that was, you're right, that was big.
The big thing, too, though, it was a good game as an example to the Texans to not use your running backs being injured as an excuse, because they ran for 229 yards. The 49ers ran for 229 yards. That's with no Christian McCaffrey. Jordan Mason got injured in the second quarter, tried to come back, left the game for good in the third quarter, and they just ran and ran and ran all over the Seahawks.
Yeah, it was a clinic on the ground for sure. So that was Thursday Night Football. Hassan Reddick, other NFL news. I mean, the Jets have so much drama going on right now. Hassan Reddick, who the Jets traded for from Philadelphia in the offseason, traded a decent draft pick, a second or a third round pick, I think, for Hassan Reddick, who was in the final year of his deal, wants a new deal. He's kind of crossed the threshold now where everybody's like, all right, bro, you're giving up 800 G's a week to try to make a point. You've amassed millions in fines. This is how you know that Hassan Reddick is probably a little out over his skis on this holdout. He got fired by his agency yesterday. CAA cut ties with Hassan Reddick. And Andrew Brandt, who is a former agent and a former front office executive with the Packers, tweeted this yesterday because it sounds like he's at least either been involved with directly or seen things like this before. And he basically said, CAA probably said, look, bro, there's nothing we can do for you anymore. Like, we're at our wit's end. Like, you're either just going to keep coughing up money or you got to go back. You got to go play.
Yeah.
You don't want to go play.
I think that managing the expectations of your client is sometimes one of the hardest things to do in many different businesses. And it seems like CAA, which has a lot of experience with a lot of clients, felt like, no, listen, Hassan, you're not making any sense now. That's what it feels like. This feels like in one of the 19 different Menendez Brothers documentaries that I've watched over the last several weeks, in one of them, they bring the part where Robert Shapiro was first working with the Menendez brothers. And if I recall properly, in this one documentary, that Robert Shapiro was basically like, listen, you guys are hosed. You got to settle. And the family's like, no, these boys are innocent. And Robert Shapiro bailed, you know? He just, like, I can't do this.
Sometimes.
So CAA in this instance is saying, like, no, we can't even.
Yeah.
Even I, the guy who will one day get O.J. Simpson off on his charges, will not accept this case.
That's right. I thought that was an interesting story. Major League Baseball playoffs. The Yankees are on to the ALCS. That wasn't painful at all, watching Gerrit Cole do a victorious post-game interview going to the ALCS. The Tigers and the Guardians are tied at 2 now. The Guardians win yesterday. So this sets up actually a really fun baseball game tomorrow. The Tigers in Cleveland with Tarek Skubal trying to pull off another upset in the postseason here in a decisive game 5.
I'm pulling for AJ Hinch. I think AJ Hinch has done a masterful job managing throughout these playoffs, both against the Astros and now in this series. It's really in an era where it's hard and people don't want to give managers credit for almost anything anymore. They just don't want to make it all about the analytics and everything. AJ Hinch has made some just very good strategic decisions, including the way their approach versus Framber Valdez, like, that was masterful, you know. And he's gotten a lot out of a lineup that doesn't look great on paper, but so I'm pulling for AJ Hinch in this.
I am too. We get a game 5 tonight between the Padres and the Dodgers, so that's fun. I'm rooting hard for the Padres because the Dodgers and their fan base are deplorable people, so that's tonight. Jose Abreu is trying a comeback. I saw this yesterday. He's signed up with a Puerto Rican Winter League team trying to make a comeback to MLB. I wish him luck.
I respect his, you know, just his love of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's making his money from the Astros still.
Yeah.
That money's, I'm sure, got zero to do with it. It's that he feels like he's got more baseball.
That'll be the sign that the championship window is closed. If Jose Abreu comes back with another Major League Baseball team and looks like a competent big league first baseman, like,
yeah,
it's just the gods speaking to us. They're like, nope, you've had your fun. Yeah,
we've already had to watch Yuli Gurriel have big moments
Correct.
In the playoffs.
Correct.
So might as well do it with Abreu now.
All right, we got a fun 7 o'clock hour planned for you. Bobby Slowick on the end-of-game decision-making against Buffalo. This is really, really good. We're going to stack the card this weekend for you in the NFL. Some very interesting games at the top of the card. 7:20, Circle of Swarm. We do our fourth Circle of Swarm of the season. That's all coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there.